Okay, this is James Newberry, and I'm here with Mr. Lorenzo Woods on Friday, February 14th, 2020, at his home on Woods Drive in Marietta, Georgia, and I appreciate you sitting down with me.
Sure.
Do you agree to the interview?
Sure.
Appreciate it. So could you tell me your full name?
Lorenzo Jefferson Woods.
And what's your birth date?
December 11th, 1934.
What were your parents' names?
Marion J. Woods, known as M.J. Woods. My mother was Catherine Woods, Catherine Robinson Woods.
And was your father's J for Jefferson?
No, Jerome.
Okay. Did you have any siblings?
Excuse me?
Do you have any siblings?
I have one sister left.
And what's her name?
Laverne Woods Jackson.
And do you have siblings who are deceased?
One brother. Deceased just a few months ago.
What was his name?
Marion Jerome Woods.
Where did you grow up?
Marietta, Georgia.
Could you talk a little bit about your early life?
Oh, well, we weren't poor. At least I didn't know we were poor. Yeah, we lived in the Marietta Housing Projects on W.W. Lee Court off of Cole Street. We were there for many years, and it was not until probably 1948 or 49 that we moved into a home, to a house. But for the most part, we were right in the Lemon Street area, Cole Street and Lemon Street, during my most formative years.
And what was the house you moved into?
It was on Lawrence Street. I remember the address is 805. Now it's still there, but it's owned by, I don't know who owns it now, but it was right across the street from the recreation center. It still exists there on Lawrence Street. That's where my sister and I were living there when we finished high school.
I see. And can you tell me a little bit about life in the housing project down on Lemon Street?
Well, it was a... The projects then were considered, as they thought was be a kind of a middle class, and it was, I guess. A lot of teachers lived in the projects, a lot of professional people, teachers, the preachers, and those, it didn't have the stigma that projects has today. But nevertheless, it was small, everybody knew everybody, each other, and it was a comfortable living experience. It was close to the school, the only high school in Cobb County at the time, so most of the people lived close to the school. And it was a nice experience. I have no regrets in living there.
So was this Fort Hill Homes?
Fort Hill Homes, that's right.
Do you remember the name of the particular building you were in? Or did they have names?
We didn't have a name. Well, yes. The area we lived was in W.W. Lee Court. There was another, not far from next to it, was Robinson Court, or Robinson Court, some people pronounce it. Those two areas I know. But this also had another cluster of apartments on Cole Street and Fort Street. But we were in W.W. Lee Court. That was kind of in the middles.
Can you describe the apartment itself? Inside?
Well, there were about six units in each building, and they were in a U shape. We were in 406, that was a 408, and a 410. Those are three buildings in that. In Robinson Court, which is right behind that, it was shaped in the same way, a U shape like. And they didn't have names per se, but they had each individual addresses, you know. But in Robinson Court, that was a main gathering, so to speak. They had what they called a spray pool. And in the summertime, of course, that was a nice little cool-off spot for everybody, all the kids to go there. But it was all paved, and we used to roller skate up and down the streets and all over the project area. We had a lot of fun down in the projects, a lot of fun.
I've heard about this spray pool.
Yeah.
Describe that for me.
Well, it was a cemented area can't describe the, it wasn't very large, but in the middle it had a water spigot, you know, straight up in the air. And the kids, we'd run through it and around it, and it just spread all over the area. It was a nice, it was a real nice place. It was small, but it served a good purpose.
So what about any of the other families in Lee Court or Robinson Court? Do you remember those names, those family names?
I remember a few of them. I know the Jacksons lived in the same building we were in. It was Gilbert Jackson and Mrs. Ernestine Jackson and her three daughters. And in the other building, there was one guy, I remember Jimmy Bracken, he lived in 408, which was right next to us. Jimmy Bracken and the, I can't think of the other, been so long ago.
Right.
Yeah. There were a lot of good friends and good neighbors there.
Did you go to church?
Yes, I did. Raised right around the street, right down the street from our Cole Street Baptist Church. That's where me and my brother and my sister and my mother, she was, that was her church. That's where she was born. My father didn't go to Cole Street because he had already joined a church up the street before he married, before my mother and he and my mother married. But he stayed at Zion Church, and we all stayed in my mother's church at Cole Street. So it was, Cole Street had a habit or had a history of staying late. My dad would go to Zion Street. He would get out before we could get out. He'd stop by Cole Street and finish up with us at Cole Street. But he would never join Cole Street. He'd stay with Zion. But he would come, occasionally he would go to Cole Street. In the days he'd go to Zion, he didn't have enough church in him, so he'd stop by Cole Street and finish up with there.
Were there other social activities outside of church that your family was involved in?
Well, in school we had two major sports. That was football and basketball. And, of course, we had an extended recreation facility from the Brother Street Y in Atlanta. And they had what we called a high Y and a gray Y. And one of the best, I guess the best athlete that went through that program was a good friend of mine, Kenneth Carter. He was quite an athlete. He played basketball, football. He was quite an athlete. He also was part of the faculty at Marietta City Schools. He went through, taught tennis, and he had a program called the Jump Ropers. And Kenneth Carter was quite an athlete and quite an instructor. He was good at what he did.
His wife lives right up there.
His wife lives right down the street. Yes, that's right. She also retired from
teaching.
From teaching, yeah.
Right. Do you want to answer?
I'm going to let it ring. I can get Father hang up. I'm going to...
So, let's go ahead and start with school. Where did you first go to school?
Where did I first go to school?
Yes, sir.
Lemon Street.
The elementary school.
Lemon Street Elementary.
And this is the wood frame building.
That's right, yeah.
Can you tell me what you remember of that building, its layout, its appearance?
Oh, it was a old wooden building, two-story. The first two grades, first and second grade, was on the first floor. The third and fourth grade was on the second floor. The fifth grade, we went into the high school building across the street. That building, the elementary school building was I didn't realize it then at the time, but it was really a hazard building. It was all wood. Even the fire escape was made out of wood, you know, at the back of the school. I mean, it was wood burning stoves to keep heat. It was very inadequate, but as a first grader through fourth grader, didn't hardly bother me. It didn't bother me at all, matter of fact. I didn't know any difference, so that was fine.
I know there was sort of a tower at the front of the building, at least a section that was straight up with a sort of pointy roof.
That's right, in the front, right, sure did. And in fact, in the entrance of the building, I think it had double doors, double wooden doors, just like a wider door. There's nothing fancy about it, but it was just an old building that stood for a long time. Mm-hmm. A lot of kids went to school through that building. I don't remember when it was torn down. I don't think I was even here. I may have been here. I don't remember.
So what was an average school day like for you from when you got up in the morning?
Well, we were living in the projects then, and one thing about it, we had something to eat every morning before we went to school, and we had lunch at school. I think the lunches cost anywhere from 5 to 10 cents, maybe 15, I don't know. It was just a regular school day. It wasn't anything fancy about it. We all enjoyed going to school. Well, most of them did. I didn't particularly have one. I didn't wake up with a smile on my face every morning. My brother and sister, they were a little, I guess I was a little different than they were. I can't describe that. But I had a hard time going to school. I was nowhere near an honor student, of course, but my two siblings preceded me. They were not only honor students, but great. They were athletic students. They played sports. They did a lot of things. I did a lot of other things. If you get my drift, I did a lot of other things, Mr. Newberry. I didn't do as well as I could have done, but I got by. I made it through.
Were there particular subjects that you liked, or did you struggle academically?
I struggled academically because I didn't apply myself like I should have. But one thing I was good at, every grade we had what we call spelling bees. I could spell good. I could spell a word. I wasn't always the last one standing, but I was in the last two or three. And if you missed a word, everybody stood up. If you missed spelling the word, you had to sit down. But I was always in the top two or three before I sat down.
So where did they hold the spelling bees? Do you remember what room or what area?
Where they had the spelling bee? Mm-hmm. It was right there in the classrooms. I guess every class had that, but it wasn't competitive with other classes. It was competitive with your classmates.
What materials did you have to use?
We all had hand-me-downs, books from other schools, from the white schools. You know, they would hand us the books that they used. When they got new ones, they give us the old ones. And some of the books had people's names, students' names, and the pages were ruffled, and they weren't the best of school, but we made the best of what we had.
Do you remember any teachers that stood out?
Oh, I remember all of my teachers, yeah. I remember every one of my teachers, from first grade all the way through high school.
Didn't you mention any names?
My first grade teacher was Miss Patterson, Miss Luella Patterson. My second grade teacher was Miss Hawkins. Third grade was Ms. Wilson. I do remember all of them, but I mean, I can. Fourth grade was Ms. Price. Fifth grade, Ms. Tomlinson. Sixth grade was Ms. Jones. Seventh grade teacher, that was my worst teacher. I'm not going to call her name. She was the worst one I had all the way through school. And then finally, eighth grade, I finally made it to high school. That was Miss Banks for a while, and we had another teacher later. I forgot her. ninth grade was Miss Eel, math teacher. She was tough. 10th and 11th grade was Miss Billups. She was our, she taught biology. And 12th grade was Miss Fred. She was our homeroom English teacher. I remember all those teachers. They all remember me too because they knew that I was Professor Wood's son. They also knew I was Jerome and Laverne's brother. And they all reminded me, you aren't like your blessed brother. You aren't like your Jerome and Laverne. You are one of them. I was terrible. I was terrible. They sent me to my dad's office. He sent me home. My mama whipped me and sent me back to school. I had a good go around.
What exactly were you doing to cut up?
They all say I was mischievous. That I didn't pay attention and I was playful and didn't. They'd just find a reason to send me to the professor's school. They didn't want, like what I was doing, they'd send me to, they wouldn't do anything about it, they'd send me to my dad.
And where was his office?
His office? It was in the high school building right next to that teacher I was telling you about, I had her name. Right next to her classroom. It was in the front of the building. He had a window facing the street. And when you go in the building and take a left, that'll be the first door you come to when you walk into the building, his office.
Did you have to go through a secretary first?
No. There's no secretary. Right in, as you enter the building, right in front of you, was once upon a time a library, but they eventually had to convert that into a classroom because of the expansion of the school. The classes didn't have enough classrooms, so they used the library for another classroom.
What did your father's office look like on the inside? What furniture did he have, and what was the setup?
It was small. He had a desk, and restroom in there and a closet. That closet was for disruptive students like myself. When you go sit in that closet, close the door, sit in the dark.
How long would you have to sit in there?
I don't think very long. You sit in there for a while, and the next class you go to, in high school that is, you let you out and go to the next class. Probably sit there 30 minutes, maybe 20 or 40 minutes.
And sort of calm you down?
Yeah. you had a hard time if you suffered from enclosures, you know. It was bad. It was bad, really bad.
So you mentioned you went across the street, what, about 7th grade? From
5th grade.
5th grade, mm-hmm. Okay. Went to the brick building.
Yes.
Okay. And you talked a little bit about the layout there. Can you tell me what year you graduated from the high school?
What year? In 52, 1952.
Okay. And what did you sort of expect to do after high school?
Well, I went to college the next year. I went to Fort Valley State. I went there for 2 years. And I finally got old enough to do what I wanted to do, so I joined the Navy. I received greetings from the Army in 54. And I didn't want to go to the Army. I didn't want to get drafted in the Army, so I volunteered for the Navy. They gave me the opportunity to do either one. I wanted to go in the Air Force like my brother did, but at that time the Air Force wasn't accepting. And the only thing I could get into at the time was the Navy. I had no idea I would ever be in the Navy, but that's what I chose to do.
Had your father encouraged you towards college?
Oh, yeah, yes, he did.
And why Fort Valley?
Well, I had a cousin who was a year ahead of me. That's where he went. And he kind of encouraged me to go so we could be roommates, and that's where I went. My cousin, Theron, he went to Fort Valley a year before I did.
Where was he from?
Marietta.
So how was, how was Fort Valley different than Marietta?
Oh, a world of difference. Well, number one, living on campus was a totally different experience. It was just, it's indescribable. Living in Marietta all my life and then going to live somewhere else, it was quite an experience. I enjoyed every minute of it. All the guys lived in one dormitory. That included, they didn't have an athletic dorm for football players or basketball players. And I happened to have a room, and my room was next door to one of the very popular football players. And we became good friends, and they had a place called Wildcat Den. That was a social thing where all the football players went, basketball, all athletes, they go there, and I went there. They took me with them. So I got attached to all the athletes pretty quickly. And I spent too much time in Wildcat Den than I did in my classrooms and studies. So I spent a lot of time in Wildcat Den.
What happened in Wildcat Den?
Anything you wanted to do. Everything happened. It wasn't a library. It wasn't no study hall. It was, that's for sure.
Was it on campus?
It was on campus, yeah.
Okay. I mean...
I take it back. It was not on campus. It was right off of campus, right behind the football field. It was like next to the locker rooms and the training rooms and things like that. That's where it was. It was on campus, but then again, it was off the football field. It wasn't near the dormitories or near the educational buildings or anything like that. It's kind of set off to itself.
So you said you were there in Fort Valley 2 years. Did you complete a degree?
No, I did.
Well, what had you been studying? What was your major?
I was majoring in sociology and pre-professional social work. I made passing grades, but I didn't do as well as I could have done. I did the same thing there just like I did in high school. Did just enough to pass.
What drew you to social work?
My brother, that's what he did. I followed him in everything he did except in sports and in academics, but he was my hero, so to speak. I wanted to be like him in a lot of ways, but it didn't work out that way, but that's what I tried to do.
How did your parents feel about sociology?
How did they feel about it? Well, I know they were very proud that he took that course of study. I don't know that he ever, when he finished college, he went right into the Air Force. He went to officer training. He became a cockpit navigator. So he pursued a career in that for a while until he stayed in the Air Force for several years. I don't know how long, but he made the rank of Lieutenant Colonel. Well, when he got out of active duty, he went into the reserve for several years. And he was called back to active duty at one point, and he did well in reserves. He made the rank of Lieutenant Colonel. Then he lived in California when he got out. And he worked for two governors. The governor's father, Pat Brown, and his son, Jerry Brown. He retired from California state government. And unfortunately, he just passed away about 6 months ago.
And how old was he?
He was 87 or 88. I think he was 88, I believe. 87, maybe, when he died.
Did you go to the funeral?
No, I didn't.
Where was it in California?
Sacramento.
So you were at Fort Valley, and then you said you went into the military. So tell me how you made that decision and where you enlisted.
Right here in Marietta, I enlisted. Okay. I mean, in Atlanta, rather.
Okay.
Yeah. And I went to boot camp in Great Lakes, Illinois. And that was for 13, 14 weeks. And from there, I went to school in Norman, Oklahoma. I went to school as a air controlman. Then I was shipped to an aircraft carrier, USS Essex. That's where I spent 3 years there. And I spent my final year at Patuxent River, Maryland, Naval Air Station in Maryland. That was only 4 years in the service. That's where I spent 4 years in the Navy.
And where did you go after your years in the Navy?
Came back to Marietta for a while, and my sister got married shortly after I was discharged, and her husband offered me a job in Sacramento where they lived, and so I went to Sacramento. I lived there for a number of years, working at the post office.
And how long were you there?
About 15 years, 15, 16 years. Then I transferred to the Sacramento Army Depot from the post office. And while I was there at Sacramento Army Depot, was when my grandfather passed and I came home for his funeral. And my cousin worked at the Atlanta Army Depot. And he set up a way where I could transfer from Sacramento to Atlanta, which I did. I made the transfer, but I didn't work at the Atlanta Army Depot. Lockheed was hiring pretty well, and it paid more than what I was making at the Army Depot, so I went to Lockheed instead. I probably should have stayed at the depot because I had already had enough time in. Adding my military experience and my post office experience and the Army Depot, I would have had almost 20 years in, but I chose to go to, which was a bad decision, ultimately a bad decision. I worked at Lockheed for about 3 or 4 years and got laid off, and so I bounced around from there the rest of the year, the rest of the time, several different jobs. I had good jobs. I had good jobs in Atlanta. I could do a lot of things, but I didn't qualify to do any. Wasn't qualified to do any of them. But if I falsified the application, they hired me. That was good. I did it. I was a communications clerk at the Atlanta Army, at the Atlanta Post, Atlanta Police Department. I got a job at the WQXI radio as a news reporter. Did that for a long time. Went to WGST radio. I also worked at WAOK radio. I was always going to the highest bidder. Mm-hmm. Wherever it was, I'd go. They didn't know. I'd tell them I graduated from Sacramento State College. Hell, they didn't know the difference. They couldn't check it out. Shit, I did. Well, and I did a good job at all of them.
Well, tell me, did you have long-term relationships or marry?
Was I married? I was married one time, legally married. I common law married twice. I was divorced from all of them. I'm not proud of that, but some things happened, and I wanted the best way out I could get. I did it. If it meant, my friends and I, we believe that if she got pregnant, she had two options. She could either abort or have it. And she chose the former. On a couple of occasions. See, abortion was like a birth control as far as he's concerned. I'm not proud of that at all, not at all. But it wasn't my total decision. It was just as much her decision as it was mine. But I would look down on people, thought that was a terrible thing to do. And it probably was in the eyesight of some, but the people that was involved in it wasn't no terrible thing. It's what we both agreed to do. So that's what we did. Some people disliked it to the point that they just, you know, started to go their way. They didn't want to be friends anymore, which is fine with me. I didn't give a damn. But it chose. I had a history of all this time, though, Mr. Newberry. I can proudly say today, this 14th day, Valentine's Day, 2020, I've been sober for about almost 10 months. After a lifetime of alcoholism and doing things I shouldn't, I've been sober now for almost a year. I'm trying to make a year at least.
Are you in AA?
Oh, yeah. Yes, sir.
That's wonderful.
Religiously, yeah.
That's good.
Yeah.
Well, I want to talk a little bit for this next portion, if you'll allow, a little bit about your father.
Okay.
Can you tell me about his personality?
My dad was a very sensitive person, publicly he was, you know, outgoing and well-spoken and everything. Privately, he was very impatient with me. Now, I'm talking about just myself. He would always tell me at all times, say, Lorenzo, you could be a better person. He said, all you have to do is, he'd tell me what I need not to do and what I couldn't do. He never did like the fact that I drank. And that bothered him terribly. So I tried to hide it from him. I didn't want to come around if I was drinking. And I definitely didn't want to him to see me drinking. So I stayed away from him because most of the time I was drinking. That's when, after my adult years, of course. And so I didn't see him a whole lot because my mother knew what was happening. She knew. But I told her, I said, I just didn't want to be around there when I'm drinking because he didn't like that. And it hurt him to see me do it. But for the most part, he's a tremendously patient man. He stayed down there at Lemon Street all those years with a lot of not so good people in some cases. He'd been threatened. He'd been some of the students he wanted to try to fight him. He had quite an experience during those early years, during my early years in school. I know one guy in particular, he offered to beat my daddy up. But he didn't back down off of that old bully. That's what he was. And it hurt him for a student to rebel against him. You see a student that was in the back of school smoking a cigarette. If he heard people cursing, that really would bother him. He was very strict in some ways. He would punish students like I told you, like he did me. Sit them in the closet. If they caught fighting, he had some boxing gloves. He'd make them go to the gym and they'd box. If you want to fight, go in the gym, put on these gloves. And he'd let them go fight and they fought until somebody quit. But the most part, our dad was a very gentle man. He was quiet and so much, but he was concerned about veterans after World War II. They didn't have any jobs to do, and he knew how to lay bricks. He knew how to do. He taught industrial arts, shop. He knew carpentry, brick mason, plaster, and those kind of things. And on his own, he had some veterans to, he would teach them how to lay bricks. He did that, first started as a volunteer, but eventually the Department of Veteran Affairs hired him to, if he got a class, so many people in a class, they'd pay him. And he did that for a long time, many years, teaching veterans how to lay brick. I know two or three of them, they made a living off, made a living doing that.
Did he do that after school or somewhere else?
After school, yeah, at school. It'd be at school, but after school hours. Like maybe, say, 4 o'clock in the evening to about 8 at night. You have this veteran. They had classrooms and also actually laying bricks. And he did that for many years. He would work his regular school work and then do that after school.
Can you tell me where he was born?
He was born in Pineland, South Carolina in 1898.
What do you know about his childhood?
They were poor. They lived on a farm. When we were children, we'd go over there in the summertime to his home. They lived in substandard housing. They didn't have running water, didn't have indoor plumbing. They lived off of the farm. My grandfather was a farmer. My grandmother, my dad's mother, she died at an early age. I remember seeing her, but I don't remember her. My grandfather was just like my dad, a hard worker. He worked from sun up to sundown. They were dirt poor. They didn't have. He was the only one. My dad was the only one out of his family of 5 sisters and a brother that went to college. When he eventually moved to Savannah, Georgia. That's where he went to school. And he was the only one that actually went to college.
That was Savannah State.
At that time, it was called Georgia State before it changed to Savannah State. When he went to school, it was Georgia State College. And it changed it to Savannah State. I believe during my lifetime, it changed to Savannah State, I believe. It was real, I don't know if I remember it being Georgia State or not. Maybe I just remember talking about it, but it was Georgia. He finished Georgia State College, and that Georgia State College changed to Savannah State.
What was his degree?
Industrial arts.
So how did he end up here in Marietta?
You know, he was here when I was, he worked at America's Georgia. And some kind of way he found out about this job in Marietta, so he came to Marietta and got the job in Marietta. I did know the history of that, but I can't remember exactly. I have it here somewhere. I know he left America's Georgia to come to Marietta.
Do you know if he came for a principal job or a teaching job?
I think he came as a teaching job, but he became principal shortly after that. I don't think he started off as a principal. I believe he started as a teacher. My mother was a teacher, but when they got married, she didn't teach anymore. He came from that tradition that woman stayed home, I guess, and he did all the work. My mother didn't. She didn't teach all the while we were in school. It wasn't until after I finished high school that she finally got to get on her own and make her own identity. She was always involved in the PTA, of course. And after I got out of the house, she went to expand her duties as PTA became a state officer in Georgia's Parents Teachers Association. That's the Georgia Colored Parents and Teachers Association, not the main Georgia Teachers Association. Yeah. She kind of made her own identity. Eventually, she became a statewide officer in the Georgia State PTA. She's affiliated with a lot of local, like the YWCA. She was on that board. She went to apply at the YWCA to take a class in ceramics, and they turned her down. And she fought for it and fought for it, and she finally got to class in YWCA. Then we later on became on the board of directors, and I believe she became president of the board of directors at one point. And her portrait still hangs over at the YWCA today. It's supposed to. I have to go over there. It might have done like did my father. It might have her portrait in some cabinet, some janitor's closet or something. I'll go find out.
So that's like the local chapter?
The local chapter over on Henderson Street, yeah.
Okay. So how did your father react to her sort of, developing her own identity after you were out of the house?
You know what, I don't know this for sure, but I believe my dad was he was a little bit jealous. Not jealous, but she was away from home a lot. She traveled all throughout the state a lot. He didn't like that. When he retired, he thought they were going to be retired together, but she got up, she spread her wings, she didn't stop. And I don't think he liked that very much. When I came home to my grandfather's funeral, I noticed that there was some friction between them two. They didn't communicate like I was used to them doing. They didn't talk much. And the few weeks that I was here, I was here every day, so I noticed a lot of things happening. She had a ceramic thing downstairs in the basement. She spent a lot of time down there. And Dad and I would be up here. I enjoyed being with him, but she didn't spend much time with him. And I noticed that. And my brother and I talked about that because he noticed the same thing. And when they come to California to visit, she would stay with my sister, and my dad would stay with my brother. Neither one of them would stay with me. I had to go to my brother and my sister to see them. They didn't come to my apartment. I know why they didn't, I know. I don't blame them. I wouldn't want them to come either, because it wasn't anything they wanted to see. I was probably the only bachelor in Sacramento during that time. I had plenty of friends. My dad, I'll take that back. My dad did come to my apartment one time. He just said, I got to go at least once to see this. And he came, and sure enough, he did his inspection tour. He would tell me, he said, Lorenzo, he always speak very, he's very articulate. He said, Lorenzo, I just don't understand. You have an empty can over here. You have a liquor bottle over here. Your refrigerator is empty. What do you eat? When do you eat? I said, well, Dad, I eat out a lot. I'm on the go quite a bit. I try to tell him something. It wasn't satisfying. He didn't believe a word I said. But he said, well, you're grown. You're doing what you want to do. I wish you well. You take care of yourself, blah, blah, blah. Give him a nice pat on the back and say, try to do your best you can, son. I said, I'm doing it, Dad. I really am. I'm doing the best I can do.
When did they move into or build this house?
It was, I don't know the exact year, but it was in the early 60s, I believe.
So this was after the kids were...
Oh, yeah, after everybody was grown and gone, yeah.
Did they build it?
Yes.
What did it look like on the inside at that time? What were these rooms here?
I assume it's just like it is now.
So this is the dining room?
This is the dining room.
And then the living room?
Two bedrooms and a den.
So where did they spend most of their time in the house?
My mother spent most of her time in the basement. My dad, he had a garden outside. He was an old farmer. He spent a lot of time in the dirt during the summertime. In the wintertime, I don't know what they did. I wasn't here a lot. When I did move back to Georgia, I lived in Atlanta most of the time. While I worked at Lockheed, I stayed here a lot because it would save me from traveling from Atlanta every day. But for the most part, they didn't communicate very much. I would say this might be a shock to a lot of people, but they were actually separated, living in the same roof, under the same roof, and that's a fact. They didn't have separate bedrooms, because they kept one bedroom open for whoever, but they had separate beds. They had twin beds, you know. And most older couples like that, they still stayed together. They were married over 60 years. It was the last 15 or 20 years, it wasn't as harmonious as we think it would be. They went to separate churches. She had her thing with the YWCA. Daddy belonged to the Masons and to another organization called the Cooperative 12. So they went their separate ways a lot.
What was the Cooperative 12?
That was a club of local men, teachers, preachers, some laymen. But there was a club that my dad and another man named, you might remember, Bradley Eppinger. He was a funeral home director, owner. He and my dad were the organizers of the Cooperative 12. And there was 12 men. That's what they called themselves. There were 12 men that there were teachers, preachers, businessmen. You know, not all, I wouldn't say they all were professional people, because they had some young, they brought younger people in too. College students. Lewis Scott, I think Lewis Scott might have been. Did you know Lewis Scott?
I haven't met him yet, but I know of him.
Yeah, well, I think he was part of that club too. I'm not sure about that. I know Mr. Weddington, a man named Charlie Harper, Bradley Eppinger, the Zion preacher, I forgot his name, my dad's church pastor.
Is that Jesse something? Reverend Jesse, can't remember his last name. He's there in the early 60s, I know.
Cook. Last name was Cook.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What was your, I know your father, when did he retire?
I know my sister came to his retirement. She was pregnant with her first child. That must have been around 63 or 4.
And how did he feel about retiring? I mean, was that something he looked forward to, or did he not want to retire?
I don't think he'd be looking forward to it. He didn't, because as soon as he retired, he got a job somewhere. I don't remember what it was, what he was doing. But he'd be going to school every day with his tie. It wasn't like a teacher's job. My mother described it, say he would get up in the morning and put on his suit and tie just like if he was going to school. But it was a job, some transportation company, where he was doing something in the office like folding stuff in envelopes or some other stuff. But he thought he still had to wear his tie and suit. I don't think he did that very long. Then after that, he had a job delivering newspapers in the morning, Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Did that for a while. So he wasn't really looking forward to it. He just had to stay busy until he could no longer do anything. He finally got into some health issues and slowed him down. He lived to be 94. 1898 till 1994. That's 96 years old. 96.
What do you remember of his final years?
His what?
His final years.
His final years. His final years he spent out in California with my sister. The last 4 years, I think. That's where he passed away, in California. When my mother passed, I moved here with my dad, and I was still working. He was left here alone by himself all day, and he finally got into a form of dementia. I remember a cab driver saw me one day. He said, "Lorenzo, I'm going to tell you, I saw your dad at the post office, and he was wandering around like he didn't know where he was. So I picked him up and asked him where he wanted to go. And he said he wanted to go home. But he was going in another direction. He wasn't going home. So the cab driver brought him home. And next time I saw him, he told me what had happened. And I realized then that he didn't need to be at home alone. So I had a lady to come and stay with him during the day. And she got to the point where she said he didn't want to eat, didn't want her to do anything for him. And it got a little difficult for her. So my brother was working in Washington, D.C. at the time. And he came down and he talked him into going to Sacramento with her to live with Laverne, my sister. And he agreed to go. And that's what he did. He stayed there for about 4 years before he passed away. They thought it was best for him to be out there with his grandchildren. My sister had retired. She was home and she was alone. They thought that was the best, and it was the best for him to be with them than to be here by himself during the day. I think what happened was my sister and my brother got together and decided to say, "Well, we better go take care of Dad. Lorenzo ain't going to do nothing. He's going to be drunk and ain't going to be able to take it." They didn't have much confidence in me, and which I didn't mind doing that. I thought it was best for him too. And that's what happened.
Well, I know it's backtracking a little bit, but do you remember your? I know he finished in the late 50s, early 60s as principal. Do you remember any comments he made or views he had on the process of desegregating the schools? Was that something that he spoke about?
Yeah, he was very upset about closing down Lemon Street School. He thought that was a moniker that should be standing there forever. He was on the Board of Education when they made that decision to close it. And I haven't been a part of that protest. And we protested the closing of the school. A guy named Walter Moon was a leader of that protest at the time. And he organized a group to march in City Hall and to address the city council in opposition of closing the school. My dad was on the Board of Education at the time, and me being a part of that protest, some people thought I was being disrespectful to my dad, but my dad did not vote to close the school. He was the only one that voted against closing. He was on the Board of Education, but we protested to the city council to persuade the board to not close the school. But it was closed and they tore it down. But my point is, when I myself addressed the city council at that particular time, and that's why people thought I was being disrespectful to my dad. I tell them I was trying to, I'm just like you guys. I didn't want the school to be closed down either, and neither did he. He didn't vote to close it. He was on the vote that didn't want to close it.
Who thought you were being disrespectful?
Well, some of the, well, they didn't know. They didn't know any better. But I don't call them the names, but there were several people who approached me and said, Lorenzo, you ought to be ashamed of yourself. You disrespect your dad. Like I said, I didn't disrespect my dad. My dad and I were on the same page. And I became a little irritated after a few people approached me with that attitude. And so I just had to spill my beans too. And I was looked upon pretty badly during that time. They knew what I was. They knew my history. Everybody always used the excuse of alcoholism as being the cause of everything. And sometimes it's not always alcoholism the cause. They don't have to be the reason for why I do certain things. Even though the worst thing that I've done in my life, the worst things I've ever done in my life was always because of alcohol, maybe, but I don't blame everything on alcohol.
Well, why did you feel so strongly about the school building and not closing it?
Because so many people went to that school. That's the only thing the black people had around here that's, as a, any kind of anything that represented the black community. Other than the churches, we always had a lot of churches, but Lemon Street School was a school known probably throughout most of the state of Georgia and the black communities all around. We produced good students, we produced good athletes, had good teachers, had good principals. Lemon Street was a well-known, well-liked school. That was one of the things in the black community. Everything was Lemon Street, man. Everything happened to Lemon Street. You know, they had concerts, dances, everything happened to Lemon Street. That's the only place we could go. Only school in Cobb County, black high school.
Do you remember how you heard that they were planning to close it?
I wasn't living here when they actually closed the school. When I was here doing the protests, I was here. I wasn't living here, but I knew Walter Moon, and he knew. He asked me if I would join the protest, and I agreed to do that. I didn't just go. I was invited to do that, like I was invited to address the council. And I addressed them very vehemently, and I spoke loud and clear. Eastham was the mayor at the time. He also worked at Lockheed, and he knew me personally. I knew him. And some of the white people in attendance and in the council itself, they thought I was some kind of radical come out of California or some old shit. You know, excuse me. But Eastham, he wanted to have me locked up and all. He wanted to do a lot of things. But I didn't back off of him. I didn't back off any of them. I told him just exactly how I felt. And then there were some black people thought I was a little radical. They thought I was they didn't appreciate some of the things I did and said around there. You know, that was years ago. Things have changed, and there's a new generation now, a new everything. I've gotten old, and I can think about some of the things back in the days, but I try not to. I don't like to go back there. Only thing I'm concerned about is my sobriety. That's the only number one thing in my life now. I've been commonly married twice and divorced now, officially married once and divorced. So all those things behind me now, Mr. Newberry, I'm just trying to live the rest of my life in sober man. That's what I live for. That's what my dad and mom would love to see me in this stage. I'm going to try to do the best I can.
Well, I appreciate your time today.
I appreciate you coming.
Is there anything else you'd like to add?
Well, no, I don't know. No, I guess I'll close it out right there. I think I said too much.
Well, thank you. I'll stop it.